Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the NY Deterrence Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Lautha, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. The NY Deterrence Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrence and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.
Welcome to NucleCast. I'm Jim Howe, filling in for the indomitable Adam Lautha as your guest host. When it comes to America's nuclear deterrent and the massive infrastructure that supports it, things always come down to people. Without a wide-ranging cadre of professional technicians, scientists, maintainers, and operators, our deterrent wouldn't deter. Undoubtedly, there's no workforce in the world with their specialty skills and expertise, and we should all be grateful for their contributions to our national security. Our guest today is Brian D'Andrea, the chairman and CEO of TechSource, one of America's leading businesses that supports not only our nuclear security enterprise, but a wide array of government and research activities. Primarily, the company's support comes in the way of the experts they bring to the table across all major disciplines related to the nuclear security enterprise and other fields of endeavor. We'll get more into that in a minute. Brian himself has a distinguished career in the U.S. Navy with SAIC and now as the CEO of TechSource, and his company has grown remarkably since its founding in 27 years ago. They have an admirable list of achievements and awards. It's really a list too long to recite here, but among them are honors like the Department of Energy's Small Business of the Year in 2023, similar honors from the Small Business Administration, and as a great measure of customer satisfaction, a client retention rate of 98%. So Brian, thank you for making the time to join us on NucleCast and welcome to the show.
Oh, I'm very happy to be here, and it's quite an honor to be able to be part of this podcast series.
Well, great. So let's start at the beginning. Everyone's got a backstory. I'm sure yours is pretty fascinating. You know, what were you doing with your life before you started the company, or I'm sorry, joined the company? I know it already started, but you were one of their very early employees. You know, how did that come about?
Yes, I was working with the very large consulting firm in and around the Department of Energy and Defense programs with the old SAIC, which is now called Leidos. And little TechSource approached me because they had grown just enough that they were wanting to worry about their future and needed a COO and somebody to help them with some strategic growth. And I happened to be looking at the time also because I thought it was just time for myself to do look for another challenge to go into the government contracting world in a more meaningful way, addressing the full breadth of what companies have to address. I somehow got involved in this nuclear world by my last assignment, active duty Navy. I handled chemical, biological, radiological protection gear for naval aviation, and that translated over to the environmental management organization. And then I found my place in defense programs, and I've been supporting defense programs for over 20 years now.
Sounds real good. So you spent time in the Navy, working for SAIC, you come over to TechSource, and you were one of the very early employees. What was your employee number, I mean, coming in?
I was the fourth full-time employee in the company. The rest of them, there were about 12 or so that were part-time, but I was the fourth full-time employee.
And now it's a much, much larger enterprise. We'll talk about that in a second, too. That's terrific. So what is TechSource's value proposition for the industry?
Well, I put some thought into that. You'd asked me that question in our earlier call. We started off with the critical skills retention. That's what we saw as our market and our value proposition. And that stemmed from being able to, one, evaluate the market about the donut hole that we watched expanding in the late 90s of talent. Either talent was 50 years older or they were very, very young and dwindling. And so they saw that market spot. They saw the critical skills that needed to be retained for linear particle accelerators initially, which involved many national laboratories. But they also linked the business model to it, to attract and retain and to focus on more strategic answers with these people, because that's what it was going to take. So our value proposition today, growing from those early days of subject matter experts that focused on filling holes in the linear particle accelerator world of major projects like the accelerated production of tritium was the initial one, spallation neutron source at Oak Ridge, and others involving almost all national labs, had developed into a providing a agile and attractive business model, both for the employees and for those working with us in critical national skill areas, in this case, nuclear. So a lot of nuclear science and engineering. And we focused on the program side, which is very unusual for a support contractor of GovCon. You'll find us over in the experimentation area, helping design, helping to work with experiments or deliver what the mission is, program support, quality assurance, project controls, safety, that type. We do have people that do that, but our heart is in the program side of this. And so we take it very seriously that we're all about mission delivery and focusing on our clients' missions to deliver, because the country spent several decades training and also giving experiences to these subject matter experts that we have become a retainer for the nation. And so our value proposition is provide that expertise, try to fill that donut hole of nuclear experience in this day and time, and help develop the next generation with the mentoring, as well as helping roll up the sleeves and work right beside them today to bring our project and mission delivery forward.
Understood. And you've grown a huge amount since you were employee number four. I mean, how big is the company now, and what sort of revenue growth have you seen over the years?
We typically quote that we have 500 plus people. And the reason I say 500 plus, some of our SMEs, you know, time goes on. And this is one of the issues in the nuclear security enterprise is time has gone on. These folks have timed out. They've gotten older and they're not willing to work. So even though I have them on our rolls, we always have to call the folks with a lot of experience, those well-seasoned individuals, and find out if they're still available to work. But we have about 500 active people right now, of which about, I think it's 225 are full-time. The balance is part-time that they are active day-to-day. But frankly, TechSource manages a roster of well over 1,000 SMEs that we may not use for a while because their expertise is so isolated that you have to wait for the demand call on them. So yes, quite a bit different from the day I joined them when I was the fourth full-time employee, and this SME list was about 35.
And is it fair to say, isn't TechSource an employee-owned company? Is that how you've gone?
Well, we started out with two founders that owned and ran the company, and then they introduced me into it as we began to grow, and it's always a we in TechSource. And then Don Trost, who is kind of an icon in the Department of Energy, joined us, and he, the four of us, held the company closely. So closely held company to about 2018, when two of those folks were starting to get on a retirement path. And a exceptional COO I was able to obtain, a classmate of mine from the Naval Academy, Jeff Gianjulli, joined us, and he needed to be part of that ownership. And so for the next set of years, we expanded it to our senior management team. So it grew to still closely held about 10 people. And then just recently, at the end of March, we had made a decision a year ago to seriously explore employee ownership. And at the end of March, March 31st, we closed the transaction that the ownership of this company is now by the employees. It's called an employee stock ownership program ownership. And that was based on a desire to keep TechSource. It was time for us to start thinking about a scalable ownership model for the future, and then also reward those that got us here. And it's our team.
And talking about the professionals that make up your 500 to 1,000, you know, folks on roster, I would imagine they're highly educated. Do you have like statistics on number of PhDs or percentage or anything like that?
Yes, it was in the early days. It was the very early days, the early 2000s, predominantly PhDs, very small cadre. For about a decade and a half, it was about a 40-40-20, 40% PhDs, 40% masters, 20% bachelors and the few technicians that we had. Starting about 2018, because of the demand signal on us and our this achievement of a trusted partnership, moving into the Los Alamos National Lab Management and expanding at NNSA headquarters, we needed to green our workforce because that's what we were encouraging our clients to do also. And we were getting more responsibilities than just those really serious subject matter experts. We needed to be able to do a broader set or respond to a broader scope that they were asking us to do because they wanted to work with us. So now we're basically about, if I, my memory serves me correctly, we're about 30, that's 60, and then another 20% bachelors. And then the balance is technicians, associate's degrees and so forth, because we've had to get those resources to give a holistic answer to our clients.
And if you had to kind of distill it down to, you know, the key areas of expertise, is it nuclear or how would you describe that?
We still are predominantly nuclear science and engineering and the technologies that are associated with it. We started out accelerator production of tritium in the accelerator area. That was clearly nuclear, and expanded into commercial power reactor related work and the strategic stockpile. And in 2012, a lot of companies, I don't think we were alone because of sequestration, we're doing some soul searching on what do we do for the future when it was so difficult at the time. And our board and our founders, and we got together and we doubled down on nuclear. We said the nation, we just concluded the nation cannot do without this. We just couldn't get our head around this scenario where it would go away or go further down. So we doubled down and continued to refresh our subject matter expert cohort. And lo and behold, 5 years later, it began a hockey stick increase in budget and demand signal and mission imperative that we happen to be sitting on a treasure trove of the expertise that ran these programs in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. And so that's how we ended up where we are.
And your timing might be really exceptional here. We're seeing in the commercial, the civil power market, just this explosion of interest in companies that are developing micro reactors, small modular reactors, new enrichment and fuel fabrication capabilities. Is that something that, you know, TechSource can be, you know, supporting based on your expertise?
We think we've located the niche. We tend to be a niche player because we like to focus and bring a lot of value with this expertise. Commercial power was part of our portfolio all through the 2000s into the early 2010s. Post-Fukushima, as you well know, things had gotten a little reversed there for a while. Nuclear fuels, the science associated with nuclear fuels, upset conditions, nuclear reactor design, trade-offs, and so forth were part of our portfolio then. They've been dormant for about a decade, but we have been reinvigorating them. And the niche we'd like to play is assisting these this multitude of companies in relation to what had been the past three decades with their safeguard, security, and safety systems and the approach to do that. And then there's a link into licensing and so forth. With our expertise, especially a couple of SMEs that we've been very fortunate to join us from the IAEA, we think we have a niche play here, and we are developing a strategic relationship with an Italian firm that is kind of the international source for detectors and so forth. So the answer is yes, commercial power. We're still trying to figure out how to enter there because the economic model just kept on getting in the way of our board, you know, in a good way. They were saying the economic model just doesn't make sense that this will take off. But I think in the recent months, most importantly, this executive order, I think the conditions are ripe that we need to make a serious push to get into that area of the market. And we have the nuclear expertise to make a real go of that.
Yeah, and I might add that these executive orders really focus a lot on the DoD aspects of this. They're going to be doing, you're going to now have a program of record at DoD for both stationary fixed site reactors as well as deployable reactors. And DoD is going to be a really key player here in helping, you know, catalyze, you know, civil power growth, which is a really, I think, a really smart approach to things. So good luck with that. I mean, I think there's a lot of opportunity for you there. I just wanted to ask one more historical question about the company. Was there another outside company that really kind of helped you guys, you know, grow over the years?
Well, we have been very fortunate to have individuals help us. There's a whole list that it'd be like an Academy Award list here of people that when they got, they either knew the people already involved in TechSource or when they got to know the mission imperative focus that we have for our clients, they really were drawn to it and they contributed for a long time. Our board members did it just gratis because they saw the hole that we were fitting in our national mission. But recently in the nearer term, the team at Triad, a team at Los Alamos National Lab, Triad, I can't say enough about all three of those LLC members, Battelle, University of California, Texas A&M. They all have really pushed the idea of a strategic view of life and draw on all resources. So they were much more willing to look at their small business partners, which we were fortunate to join that team, particularly for our plutonium knowledge. And particularly Battelle pushed the limits of the non-standard, you know, of looking at this differently in order to get operations turned around and to scale for this mission that was coming. So I just can't say enough of those three, and particularly Battelle. I'll work with them anywhere.
That sounds good. So what we're going to do now is we're going to take a really short break for our sponsor and then come back. We want to learn more about some of the actual work that you're doing today and some of the exciting projects you're involved with. So we'll be right back for part two of this conversation. Thank you.
This episode of NucleCast is brought to you by the AMLA Deterrent Center, whose mission is to educate Americans about the nuclear enterprise and strategic deterrence.
And we're back with NucleCast with Brian D'Andrea, who is the CEO and chairman of TechSource. He's been telling us about the company's history, which is pretty remarkable. And now we're going to talk a little bit about some of the work that they're doing today, which is equally remarkable. So first of all, you know, who are really your customers right now? Is it all government agencies? Is it private industry? Who are you working for the most?
Oh, roughly 90-95% is government contracting. And we do have some private initiatives, some commercial industry, particularly in the linear accelerator area for applications. But by far, as I mentioned earlier, the 2012 doubling down on nuclear, that really translated into the strategic stockpile programs. And so our major customer is the National Nuclear Security Administration and their MNOs, such as being a part of the team at Los Alamos, being a part of the team at Pantex, which is relatively newly awarded, and being involved in all the sites associated with NNSA to some degree.
And this is all very serious business when you're talking about the stockpile and dealing with those issues. And you've got a very, I would say, you know, kind of a rigorous approach. I think you call it the project approach, you know, how you address things. Can you talk about your project approach? And
yeah, I guess most fundamentally, one of the things that we bring into a room is typically is a push to a systems view on how to get projects done. It's rarely that there's a magic wand or a single vector you take to get something done. And so the process that we've adopted focuses on first scrutinizing the requirements. Got to have a meeting of the mind of the requirements. And it's particularly under this administration, their push for efficiency and so forth, a lot of what comes out of that is, hey, we got to start testing the requirements again, because we've kind of dug a hole because the mission imperative had kind of taken a back seat to the keep it all in the box view, you know, of the past couple decades. And so we initiate by engaging with the client and identifying those requirements. Really having trying to take the time to do that work up front. There was a book that Dr. Adams had me get about 2 years ago called Why Big Projects Fail. And frankly, it's the front end. It's the front end of understanding the requirements and making sure there's enough planning done. Now, it didn't encourage, you know, paralysis with analysis of planning, but just doing that sufficiently and allowing time for that. Then we integrate our expertise into the program. What is a tech source can do for you? And we don't try to do it all, because we also see that as a fundamental error, and that we will identify holes in the requirements or holes in how to respond to the requirements and fill them. Now, it'll either be tech source people, or we have a two decade reputation of, if we're not the right solution, we will direct you. We will either go get them for you, or we will direct you to them to get the right expertise on your program. So again, the mission imperative demands you go get the best expertise for your program, and we will facilitate that for you. So that's integrating the program to the greatest degree we can and being partnered in it. Then we execute the solution. You form the plan, you stick to the plan, you execute, and then you drive success by performance metrics. Particularly in large organizations, the metrics are so important, because the staff's trying to communicate that narrowing, they'll work to those metrics. And then you just continue to run through that process. It takes courage to go through this process, because you're going to start identifying where the emperor has no clothes, or you're going to indicate and have to self-confess, we don't have the right people. So we have to go get the right answer. And by focusing on the requirements connected to the mission imperative, we've shown great success in being able to get programs moving in the right direction from the get-go, or get them out of the tank, as we say, when they get off kilter. And the other, through that process, we've been able to develop this connectivity to our client base as the trusted partner, coming in and looking at how do we get their program done, their project done, and also proving that, you know, you have to be realistic. You lay out the best plans, and sometimes it goes off the rail. This process helps us get it back on the rail. And we have been drawn in as that trusted partner that you really want around for when your program or project doesn't progress as it should. And to try to bring that specialty help, try to augment the staff, come up with better ideas, and so forth. And if you just keep using our project approach, you'll usually come out of the other end with success.
Yeah, I got to admit to being really attracted to that first thing you talked about of, you know, setting the requirements and having clarity on the requirements. Having watched back in my Coast Guard days, you know, a $20 billion acquisition project really had struggles for many, many years because they hadn't really defined things well. And there's a lot of expectations on the contractor side that were not in line with the military side and vice versa. So getting that straight and having that, you know, kind of meeting of the minds where everyone agrees the way to move forward is really essential. So I thank you for that. Now, a couple of the specific projects and things that you're working on, one that I was reading about is the weapons knowledge preservation and transfer pathways. Could you talk about that? It sounds like a really important thing to have.
Yes. The earlier mention of being able to mentor people, develop the workforce is essential. Commercial power is realizing that now too. And the nuclear security enterprise, including Defense Department, also realizes that. And lo and behold, with this resurgence in reactors, we're going to be competing. The government requirements for the NSE are going to now start competing after nuclear knowledge and nuclear experience with commercial power. So this is going to get real interesting. What we have seen, and the reason that this WKPT, Weapons Knowledge Preservation and Transfer, developed was you have to leverage the people that have been there, done that, in order to ramp up your greened workforce faster. The history of it, we've mentioned that there was 2-3 decades of a gaping hole that developed, both in the nuclear security world and the nuclear power. We have to try to take that greened workforce, which has greened a lot over the past 5-7 years, and ramp them up faster without the full-blown weapons complex humming along like it did in the 60s, 70s, and 80s with underground testing and all those other things that came with it. back then, there was so much work going on that OJT was the way you did it. Many years working beside a team that was actively involved in the whole process. And so WKPT, a couple of folks at TechSource worked with Jay Pappy at the NA-12, I'm sorry about the acronym, but the systems associated with some of our weapons, and put together a set of modules in order to have the people that actually did it share that knowledge through training platform, classes and mentor and follow-on mentoring with the newer workforce. We saw this as, one, we have the knowledge because of our SME pool, and two, these are the people that conducted the tests, that did the designs, that worried about the quality, not professional trainers, not a canned set of videos, but people that stood in front of you and said, we've been where you're going. So let us share with you some of the wisdom that we have. And then what the secret sauce of that particular initiative is, now they have their point of contact. If they run into a QA problem, or they run into phase X, 6X process or something like that, they have a number they can pick it up and say, hey, can we go back over what you talked about and help me think this through? It's really powerful and very, very successful at this point with a growing demand. So that creates that workforce, enhances the workforce pipeline, but brings that green workforce forward faster. It's not a be all end all, but boy, it's very effective in its own role.
It sounds like mentoring on steroids type of thing.
It sure does. We start off with a big academic exercise, but then there's the potential, if they call, because we're not forcing ourselves, right, for the mentoring aspect afterwards. And we believe that this would be could be done for the commercial power industry also. For all nuclear. And then there's tie-ins with other programs we have with universities and stuff to worry about the workforce pipeline.
So another one of the programs that you're associated with is the Critical Supplier Program. Could you talk about that, why it's important, what's happening there?
Well, this began as a very, very isolated, custom-tailored business case analysis for Los Alamos National Laboratory. They were part of that team, and they were showing, we're closely associated and supporting the pit production there, which many of you are familiar with. And what came out of it was we're starting to exercise muscles we haven't exercised for a couple decades. And in this particular case, it was how to, one of the most focused ones was how to obtain material that was very uniquely produced, that they had a stockpile of it for a couple decades, and now they needed more of it. And they started to find out that that person, that machine or whatever, was going offline or was offline, or they were having to go through the challenge of reverse engineering some of these materials possibly. Well, it also expanded into some of the, I'd call them exotic materials used in this area. That's as far as we can go with that. And then also they had needs for expanded classified workspace. And then what a lot of folks don't see is the machines that are used in these machine shops for these weapons and the associated scientific work and so forth are custom made because of the incredible tolerances and unique application they have. So we did a business case analysis, which TechSource developed kind of an approach that has been very popular for many years on not just cost benefit. This is a business case about looking at the holistic picture about what we're looking at. And we ended up looking at a machine designer producer, looked at a expanded space for a unique fabrication that needed to be in classified space and an exotic materials. And Jim, it was so close. One of them, were just about, their board was discussing offshoring their design and engineering, which would have put it at conflict with supporting our nuclear stockpile. That really fired us up to look at this more closely. Working with Los Alamos, they understood what we were finding, and working very closely with them with their horsepower behind it. Like I mentioned, the 3 and Battelle, thinking the non-standard, they moved us into a space on these critical suppliers move into a strategic relationship with them that keeps their expertise growing, gets their clearances, gets them talking to us, and that they are, assured is the wrong term, but they see the mission runway like the laboratory or NSA sees it, and they provide, it allows them to staff, train, maintain quality assurance, even make their own, which is their own investment in the nuclear security enterprise that is out of their overhead. They prepare for it because now they have, we recognize their uniqueness, and we get into a long-term relationship with them. Now, it's not 75. It's critical suppliers. There's probably 8 of them here at Los Alamos so far. They're going to expand it. There's a process. But it's been so effective that we happen to have the right program manager, really put horsepower around it from TechSource, and the program has become nationalized. And NSA is trying to figure out how to leverage it across the complex. So it answers a particular avenue and shifts the complex away from thinking I'm working with a vendor to I'm working with a strategic partner, and we're going to behave differently and work this differently because they have to maintain their industrial base in order to serve us. So it's worked out pretty well.
And having worked for one of those suppliers to the complex in the past life, it was always rewarding to hear fairly recently the NNSA administrators saying it needs to be a partnership between them and industry, and rather than a top down, you're going to just do what we say, and that's that. It's I think that's really become a much more positive relationship between the two sides of the aisle there. There's a third thing I just mentioned very briefly, the Weapons Production Technology and Nuclear Training Initiative. It sounds like it's somewhat related to the Critical Supplier Program. Is that fair to say?
It's related with both WKPT to a certain sense, but Critical Supplier, that part of the supply here was the workforce pipeline. And again, as usual, this gets to be a broken record for those that remember what a record is. The taking a different perspective on the problem. What's the requirement? What are we trying to get done? What became apparent several years ago to the pit production world, Tony, was not the immediate, but what was the future of both? Let me back up. It was both. How can we get more R&D done sooner that goes beyond the capability or capacity, not the capability, capacity of the lab, because so much is happening, and also has a net effect of helping me encourage college students to join the national security enterprise, hopefully with, in this case, Los Alamos, because it's their program. It wasn't born out of a recruiting initiative. It was just crystal clear. It is one of the benefits of it. And so what they were able to do was engage on small R&D projects that of great value to the plutonium and the pit production. We're up to 8 universities right now. And these universities tend to have an area of emphasis. And then TechSource supplies a program manager to help facilitate, but the SMEs to liaison with the universities to keep them grounded in what the mission needs. And through that really robust set of R&D projects, we engage professors and a very large cohort of students. And the net effect is they've been getting some research input turned around quickly. And the benefit is the students and the universities get exposed to the nuclear security enterprise, which makes them interested in it, which makes them want to work for it, because there's an awful lot of competition out there from the IT industry, from the growing commercial nuclear industry, et cetera, that I think it was a Texas A&M representative that made it clear to me, says, we've got to be interacting with the sophomores in the college. That's where industry is getting to them. And this provided a platform that was non-traditional, that put research projects directly in the universities that the sophomores and juniors are engaged in. And those that have decided to ask for employment at the lab, and we're interviewed, we have like an 80% acceptance rate from them. Because in some cases, we've been able to get their clearances And so they're, you know, we're doing everything we can to move it faster and be more agile. And this program is really one attribute that's been working really well.
Well, let's go ahead and put you on the spot a little bit. You used the phrase secret sauce a little while ago. When I look at the awards you've received and the glowing reviews we've read about the company, you know, what is your secret sauce for making your clients and your customers so happy?
Oh boy. Do you have an hour or so? When I boil it down, when I look at what TechSource has emerged, the secret sauce is the combination of an uncompromising insistence on technical expertise from the day we started, linking it with a business model that is more agile and more able to keep bureaucracy at a hold, brings us experts that really want to work for TechSource. And then since we have the expertise, that same agility that we do for our people, the same focus on expertise, the focus on our principles and values, has translated into the mission imperative we keep for our client. Frankly, the leadership in this company has never been able to understand why you get target fixated on profit and on these other things that distract you from focusing on what you're supposed to be doing, helping your client get the mission done. And we've had a number of former leaders from NNSA, from top levels of NNSA, members of our board, from the MNOs, just almost shocked by how persistent we are about focusing on that mission delivery. And that has translated over time to what we consider the top level position, the trusted partner. We're the trusted partner that they'll call when they have a real problem. They'll call us. And they'll get the right scoop, whether we can help or what we recommend that they do get help from elsewhere. We'll go get the other company. If there's somebody better, we have a long history of subbing these people, get the answer and get it back on track or get it moving faster. So that trusted partner linked with our business model, all emphasizing on a great set of people, really secret sauce. It's three ingredients.
Well, that, ladies and gentlemen, is a great way to kind of wrap things up. But I don't want to end until we talk real briefly about the Ev Bechner Award, because your company has a long tradition of community engagement and community service, as well as to the enterprise. So what is the Ev Bechner Award?
For those that don't know, Dr. Everett Bechner was associated with this nuclear security enterprise for over five decades. And he was gracious enough to join our board in 2005, I think it was. It might have been just a little bit later, but I think that's when it was. And like I mentioned earlier, he gave of his own time for about 10 years. And then when we got big enough, we decided to compensate them a little bit. And he worked until the day he passed as a member of our board. I had just had the great fortune to meet with him 2 weeks before he passed, that I approached him and said that the leadership of TechSource had been thinking about this, and we wanted to do something that's enduring and also focused on the nuclear security enterprise. And so I asked his permission to use his name, and also we considered him the first awardee of the Dr. Everett Bechner Legacy Award. And this award is going to be run out of the National Nuclear Museum down in Albuquerque. They changed their name. I used to know it, the old name. We will sponsor it through there. And at a national conference this October, we will award the first Dr. Ev Bechner Legacy Award to Everett, posthumously in this case, sadly. And in the ensuing years, we will find somebody that has literally committed their decades to it and have had a personal influence of giving to the nuclear security enterprise that went way beyond compensation or prestige. It was because of a commitment to the nation. And we couldn't think of anything better to do for Ev, and we couldn't think of any better person to highlight in that award.
And that's a great and generous way to kind of end this podcast. I can't thank you enough for being with us, Brian, here on Nuclicast. You really gave us some great insights into your company. I hope that our listeners will check you out at TechSource-Inc. That's TechSource-Inc.com. Thanks so much for being here.
It was a real pleasure. Thank you, Jim.
And thank you to the team at Anwa Deterrence Center for putting on this podcast, and especially to our producer, the talented Miss Kimberly. From all of us at NucleCast, thank you for listening.
This has been a production of the Anwa Deterrence Center, a 501c3 that seeks to educate key decision makers, stakeholders, and the public to ensure a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent. Our executive producer is Kimberly Charrington, and this episode has been engineered and mixed by David Krunkel. Help us grow our followers by sharing it and follow the show on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at NucleCast.